Blog Talk Radio.
Chicago's Black Business Radio Network, all black, all news, all you.
Remember playing Midwest on Friday nights all night long? Did you know you were writing history? The evolution of Midwest has received warm responses from Midwest players and black history enthusiasts across the USA. The Evolution of Midwest is an authoritative book containing the most comprehensive information ever published on the subject. It's now available at RonaldLAllen.com. The book covers every aspect of the game, from its origin and growth period to its international expansion. Get your autographed copy at RonaldLAllen.com today. Sit down tonight with friends to a game of Midwest. Visit RonaldLAllen.com today.
Chicago's Black Business Radio Network, all black, all news, all you.
Hello, this is Diana Long, your host for today, and we're a show about artists and activists in Chicago. And today we're going to be talking with Dr. Ayo Ma'at here in Chicago. It's good to talk with you, Dr. Ma'at. I'm glad you could join us today. I've got a few questions for you, but I thought we'd start first, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and telling us about yourself as an artist and what organizations you work with. Thank you so much.
Okay, welcome. I'm glad to be on the show today. I am the president and CEO of Improve, the independent movement of paratransit riders for unity, vehicles equality. I'm also the founder and president of the Black Network in Children's Emotional Health. I work with ADAPT, the Alliance for Community Services, various groups of Access Living, and the Northside Action for Justice. I have been an artist, since I was a teenager, and I've been an activist since I was a teenager. And when you combine the two together, it's a pretty interesting world, and your work is never done.
That's right. Thank you. Tell me a little bit about your interest in art. You say you started making art around the time you were a teenager, or at least started identifying as an artist at that time?
Well, just about everyone in my family was an artist, though not all formally trained. My oldest brother and I were the only formally trained artists, but I started young in high school. When I was in college, I didn't do too much art until I got to Truman College later in life. But most of what I did related to social justice and things that were organic, not your usual type of art, even though I studied fine art. I just love doing art that expressed not only how I felt, but the world around me. It seemed like
great.
A good way also to relax and also to express without getting arrested. Many activists get arrested doing a lot of social justice activities. And it was also a way not only of financing my education, but also it was a way to help other organizations. So I did a lot of graphic design and artwork to help other organizations that were nonprofits that could not pay always for people to help them. But it, you know, it kept me pretty busy.
Tell me,
one of the things
I
like.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
One of the things that I like mostly is to express art as a meditation. When I do art, I'm thinking and meditating. I'm in another zone. So it's something that I like to do to sort of become someone other than the human being that I am on a daily basis. It takes you to another place, another level.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I find art making very meditative and find it relaxing and kind of takes me out of my regular world. So I agree with that. I know you're a very educated person. Can you tell us about your educational background?
I have a PhD. It's in philosophy. I have a master's degree in philosophy and also spirituality. I'm an ordained minister, though many don't know this. And I've also studied computer science, graphic design. I have an associate degree in visual art. I've won awards at various art shows. And I've also taken experiential education at universities such as Northeastern. I've been a student for life. I have a lot of certificates and vocational training as well as degrees. I have a computer science degree as well. I attended Illinois Institute of Technology, but did not get a degree by choice, not just because the classes were so expensive as it was that I experienced a lot of disenfranchisement at that university from not only teachers but students, not all of them. The university has changed since then. I've also taken some courses downstate at Northern Illinois. But my best education has come from life and from being around people who share experiences and ideas. So I have a lot of certificates on my wall. I have a lot of degrees. But my best education has been in life, getting to know people, working with people at the community level, taking after this training. Some of the best training I've ever gotten in life was from the Advocacy Institute that used to exist in Washington, D.C., with Mike Preshew, Kathleen Sheeke, and David Cohen. That was 14 grueling days of work, and they did not allow my disability to stop me. When I couldn't get up, they got me out of bed. When I couldn't sit up, they propped me up. They helped me the whole way. It was exciting. And also the Hope Leadership Institute here in Chicago, which is run by Sakoni Karanja. That was 14 weeks of education. And then the Hull House. I took their entrepreneurship training program. Excellent. But, of course, they're gone. Another good institute that did not get the funding they needed, which leads me to other things. How do artists survive in a world where people don't really, they appreciate the art, but don't appreciate the fact that artists have to live, that we're not just doing art just to look at it ourselves, but we do art for ourselves and the world. We need to get paid for it, and we can't just continue to donate our art. We also do it for social justice projects because we want to show the world how the other half lives. When I say the other half, I really mean the 99% of people who don't have the decision-making power and wealth that fuels this government, this nation, this world. But artists are very, very worthy of being paid and being appreciated. Some of the other things I do.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask you, you had mentioned to me recently that when artists retire, that often they're forced to sell their art below cost in order to eat, pay debts, and that retirement and disability benefits are lower, that people often don't have respect for the costs involved in doing our work. What did you mean by that, about the retirement or disability benefits are lower?
Well, some people seem to think that when someone is a retiree, that they have this big retirement fund to not only live on, but to help fund other organizations. And most of us are living at poverty level because our cost of living is high. We don't get the same benefits that others do. And even if we worked in the past with higher salaries, by the time we retire, you know, the cost of living is so high that we just, you know, we just can't. We can't do the same things we used to. Some of us, for example, myself, I'm a vegan. I eat organic. I don't buy chemicals. I can't. I mean, I know you relate to that. The environment is heavily dosed with drugs. And when we do our art, some of us who don't use natural green substances, if we use chemicals, we have to wear masks. It takes a great toll on your health. And those are costs that your health care benefits don't pay for. Or you may, you know, your food costs may be high, your light and gas. And if you're still trying to do art, sometimes you can't. You have to wait. Or let's say you have to live and you end up selling pieces at 50 to 75% below cost. You don't even recoup, you know, your labor because you have to live. And I think that it's a statement of how unappreciated we are for our community work, our volunteer work, and our artwork. And when we do donate our artwork to organizations to help them raise funds, they don't in turn come back and buy from us. They buy from the big box stores, and a lot of us are, you know, we're doing one-of-a-kind stuff. We're doing handmade stuff. We're putting our blood, sweat, and tears into it. We're not doing work that you can just get a production line going on, especially independent artists. And we have living expenses that others don't have. We just do. Even the art materials have changed. We don't get the discounts we used to get. So we have to factor in our labor as well as the cost of materials to replace the art, whether we sell it or donate it. And I think that when so many different nonprofits expect us to donate, sometimes we just do it, but we always do it from the goodness of our heart. But sometimes we do it because we cannot afford to pay tickets for their $400 plate dinners, $100 dinners, $150 plate dinners. So we give back with our art. Or we may do their banners, their flyers, their tickets for them. So we're constantly doing barter exchange. We're constantly trying to make the world better than what it was or is, and there needs to be some type of reciprocation. Fortunately, I am also a campaign worker in the Bernie 2016, the president campaign. I'm enjoying it. It's a lot of work, and I'm still running the Black Network and Children's Emotional Health, or Be Nicer. I'm still running Improve. It's tiring. But I'm looking forward to a day when we have a government that not only respects artists, but respects people of all races, creeds, et cetera. It's not that I don't like President Obama. I love him. But we need somebody that can hold the Congress, the elected officials, accountable and is not afraid to do so. And we still need artists and activists to still work to bring about a better world, to not only bring beauty to the world, but to bring back government of the people and probably, you know, set up some work progressive art programs. Programs
right.
where people don't have to be in the street because they can't right. afford the rent or the lights, or they're out there bored and in the street. We have a lot of young artists that could really be doing some work. I've used a few of them in my program. I'm sure you have too, Diana.
Sure, yeah. You know, you have made so many good points, and I really appreciate your saying everything you've said, and I could not agree with you more. I got the right person on the program today. Thank you so much. You know, you mentioned briefly Be Nicer, and wonder if I've long admired your work with this organization, and I wonder if you could tell people about the organization, what kinds of things it does, what it stands for, and your involvement in it, and what you hope for it, if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about that.
Of course. I set up Be Nicer, or the Black Network and Children's Emotional Health, in March of 1992, at a time when youth who were Black and had emotional and behavior problems were going into the child welfare system and juvenile justice system. There was no incentive to help the families of these children, to help them. Instead of them being assisted and treated, they were being labeled. There were many studies done that were also criminalizing them and their parents. And in
right.
the Black community, there was a denial going around that a child had any form of mental or emotional illness. So the children were stigmatized. A lot of them ended up leaving home or becoming runaways or being raped, abused, and I had to stop that. I set up a program at Loyola Park, which is part of the Park District at one time, in which I was only funded for 2 days a week, but I ran it almost seven because the children just kept coming. I convinced the police to send children to our program who had been accused of shoplifting rather than jail them. And it was successful. The children actually wanted to come. And even though I wasn't paid for the food, I served them organic vegan food. They thought it was strange, but they loved it. There wasn't a crumb left. because most of these children suffered from childhood malnutrition. They were starving, and the only meals they got were either from school or our program. And, of course, the school lunch was entirely different from what we served them. But we taught them values. We taught them how to respect people who were different, regardless of their race, their age, no matter how they appeared. And at least 50 to 60% of the children in my program did have some sort of physical or mental disability. Some of them were babies who had been what they used to call cocaine-addicted babies who were addicted in the womb. And some of them had parents that worked two or three jobs who were not at home. My daughter even babysat for some of these children. We'd have the program and the parents wouldn't show. We'd take them to camp in Michigan and there was no one to see them all, nor anyone to pick them up. So I hired social workers to work with them as mentors, people who could work with them and I didn't have to worry about them trying to date the girls or, you know, fondle the boys, etc. I had excellent workers, but I had to put my money into it. I was working then, and I had a good job there. And then I started teaching at Truman, not teaching at Truman, I had been teaching at Malcolm, but I was doing tutoring, and I was working at a center at Truman where we had a lot of students from all over the world who had been abused, who had escaped war, hunger, and all sorts of things. And I began to learn that this problem that we have in America of malnutrition, of hunger, of abuse, of women being treated as sexual objects existed all over the world. And I heard so many horror stories. So I set up Be Nice and to be like a sanctuary for them. I did take in a few youths who were runaways from other states, who were on drugs, but as long as they cooperated, I kept them in. If they stole, they had to return the merchandise. And they had to do something to make up for it. I got youth out of gangs. I worked with Inside Arts, which was an art liberation program. I had intergenerational art programs where seniors and young people did art together, where youth who were from Haiti and Mexico and South America could learn their languages together. I also did programs at the library, literacy programs, etc. And I worked with the credit union on financial literacy. I took the Train the Trainers workshop. That didn't go so well, though, with many of the people, especially those who were Muslim, who were not used to paying interest on loans, nor with some people who just didn't bank. They didn't trust the credit union, even though it was a bank. I know you're familiar with the credit union, but I think you did pretty good work. You gave loans to people who couldn't get loans.
I'm kind of wondering, what's the status of Be Nice right now?
Oh, my goodness. If we don't get some support soon, Be Nice and may consider dissolving. I know the members don't want to do it, but you cannot run an organization on air. It just doesn't work. We used to have 240 members who paid dues. We have, we're affiliated with Improve, which is our division that works with paratransit riders. And we're a national group. We get requests from all over the country. We cannot get help right here in Chicago. We're self-funded. We have had grants in the past for prevention programs. I have trained people. I have sent people to training. But unfortunately, when most of your staff and volunteers are either disabled or medically fragile or just want jobs that pay them a lot of money, they don't stay. So they end up leaving. And then you, as the president, CEO, is left filling the gaps, and you can't do it. It's stressful. I don't care who you are. We're not Superwoman. We're not Batman. We're human beings. We need to regenerate. We need time off. But we also need money and resources to keep functioning. And we help other organizations. We attend their fundraisers. They don't all attend ours. That is a big issue. There are organizations that have multi-million budgets.
Let me ask you this. If the people listening, now I know that this is a legitimate organization, that you've been doing this for a long time, that you're extremely qualified, that you work with a lot of really good people, and you're doing a very important work. if the people listening are interested in supporting Be NYSA and the important programs that you're providing, how can they make a donation? Can you talk to that for just a moment? And then I want to, we don't have much time left, and I want to go on to talk about improve and paratransit issues. How can they make a donation?
They can do it through our PayPal site, BNICEH@yahoo.com, which stands for Be NYSA. They can call our treasurer, Joanne Tillis, at 773-255-2113 to make arrangements. She does use Square Reader. We have many, many opportunities, and we need volunteers and cash.
Okay, can you give
us the email address for PayPal?
Can you give us the email address for PayPal?
Here's the email address, BNI,
okay.
B as in boy, N as in Nancy, I, C as in cat, E as in easy, H as in Harry, at yahoo.com. We're also on the web at www.imamary.paul.org. We are a nonprofit. We always have been. Always will be.
Okay, so they could go on that website and learn more about you, right?
They can learn more about us there. Yes.
I wanted to ask you about your work on improving paratransit, and that comes up with your Improve organization. Can you tell us briefly, we've got, what, about 5 minutes left?
That is the number one issue we're dealing with. Paratransit provides rides to people who are disabled and can't ride the bus or train. We are trying to improve it to the point where people are not left stranded. We want it returned to CTA until we can take it over ourselves. We feel that we're qualified and we can find qualified people to run it. We don't want to just replace paratransit. We want to do a paratransit that is green. We feel that it is owed to us to have a service that people can rely on that does not leave them stranded for 2 to 6 hours, and this is no joke, and it is not an on-time service. Sometimes people miss doctor appointments, work, whether it's volunteered or paid, doesn't matter. They miss medical appointments for which they are fined by the medical establishment. They can't get out to see their relatives that live in the suburbs because it doesn't run all the time. Or if it does, it's inefficient or you can't get the times you need. People wonder why they don't see us at certain events. If we ride the paratransit, there's no guarantee that we'll get there or that it will be running there on the day or time that we need it for. Don't get me wrong. It is a blessing in disguise, but it needs to be operated by people who can do it a little bit better and with less cost. We can do it cheaper. A lot of us are efficient business people, and we can hire others who know how to do the paratransit. We want to start in Illinois, beginning in Chicago, and branch out to the different communities that are partners with us through our National Paratransit People's Movement Assembly. We are people-oriented, and we believe in helping people. But we also believe that to help people, you need to have the resources to do it. So you can still contact us if you need, because we need volunteers. You can call 773.
Tell us about that. Tell us how people can contact you again.
773-916-6228 to volunteer, to donate, 773-255-2113, or go on the website. There's much information at www.imamaryprove. Not I-M-P-R-O-V-E, but I-M-P-R-U-V-E, where you can Google my name, Be NYSA, Improve. We are all over the place on the web, and we have been since the web was allowed to become public. Thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity. I am now going to de-stress, as we all should. And
now,
hope
I wonder,
I am getting an award October 10th.
Before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you, have you made any art lately?
Mostly jewelry and masks. I participated with Selena Awaleye of the Ibeji Resource Center in the show. Didn't make the money, but she may have. But it was fun. We were in Edgewater at their Artists in Motion event.
You know,
and I need to do a show, Diana. Yeah, Artists in Motion was an excellent show. I liked it. You know, but as you
all
know,
right.
Booth space costs money. It's not free. If people want to know why they don't see a lot of us, we have to pay the booth space, and we have to have a good space for people to see us. But I also have work online, and when people contact me, I can send them to Google+, or I can send them some of the samples of my work. I need to do a paint-in with you and Selena, though I haven't painted in years.
Okay,
but
well,
I will be
we'll
getting an award Saturday, October 10th, by Northside Action for Justice. Thank them for recognizing my activist work. I've been a civil rights advocate since I was a teenager, and I've been doing community activism.
Where is that going to be?
That's
going to
be at the St. Augustine College, 1345 West Argyle, Northside Action for Justice, Saturday, October 10th at 6 p.m. And there are tickets available from $20 to $100. And anyone who can't make it, who donates, the first seven people who donate a ticket for a person who can't pay to get in, I will donate a free gift of either jewelry or a tutoring session or an assessment of their research or term papers, as long as they're willing to wait, because I am overbooked.
Right. Well,
so
I want to congratulate you on this
me
award.
About that.
Yeah, I want to congratulate you on this award. You really deserve it.
Yes,
and,
thank you. Thank you.
You're a very hard
it's always
worker.
Good to be recognized by your peers.
That's right. That's right. So
we
I let you go
always.
Now. And again, thank you so much for joining us today. You're an excellent artist, a terrific social justice worker. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank
love
you
and
so
peace
much.
To everyone.
Same to you. Thank you. That was Dr. Ayo Ma'at joining us today on art and social justice issues. And this is Diana Long signing off for today. Thank you so much for joining us today. And go out and do some social justice work. Bye now.
CBBN Business Journals wants to send out a special thank you to our newest sponsor, Ms. Lillian W. Clark, author of Praying for the Unsaved Millennials and Our Families, now available on Amazon.com. Ms. Clark believes that young people want to change the world and make a meaningful impact. This 24-hour prayer guide is designed to empower and sustain the millennial generation. Pick up your ebook copy of Praying for the Unsaved Millennials and Our Families today on Amazon.com.
Chicago's Black Business Radio Network, all black, all news, all you.